Hello, everyone. This is Dan Sheridan. It is Wednesday. Thank you for joining me today. This is Sheridan on Romans, and this is number 10 in our series. And again, thanks to everyone who are writing and emailing me and telling me you're appreciating the program, and I know many of you have been listening as well to the Martin Sender Dan Sheridan Show, and I'm glad for that, too. And for those of you who are joining us who have heard our radio show out in Pittsburgh and Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, out in Omaha and Lincoln, Nebraska, and down in New Mexico, we're glad to have you come to this show, this program as well. A little bit different than Zender Sheridan, obviously. This is just little old me in my office here, just talking to you about God. And obviously, he's not excited as having that ugly mug across the table from me. And I think most of you know who that ugly mug is. By the way, you can get an actual mug of Zender Sheridan, and I don't recommend it. I like it, but you can try it. Anyway, let's get right down to Romans here, and I want to make a comment again regarding this. In verses 16 and 17, Paul announces the fact that he wanted to come to Rome. Remember this. Rome, again, was the world conqueror, and Paul was willing to go to Rome alone. Rome means force. Paul was willing to go there with God's power, God's ability, not Roman force of arms. Remember, Paul says the weapons of his warfare weren't fleshly, like Rome had. Paul had an evangel that carried with it God's saving power to everyone who believes. And so Paul comes to Rome, and he wants to do this. This is his desire at this point, to come there to announce this great message of the accomplishments of Christ. And we saw that God's righteousness is being revealed in this message, in the message. The message proclaimed reveals God's rightness. When we tell people what Christ accomplished, everything is set right. Do you understand that? The message of the cross of Calvary sets everything right. All of God's attributes are harmonized in the works, in the accomplishments of Christ. When you and I, and when all of humanity finally reaches the consummation, when everyone is restored to God, it'll be so because it was the right thing to do on the basis of the accomplishments of Christ. I can't stress this enough. But today, God's message of justification, we see that God is being right in what he's doing and justifying irreverent sinners such as you and I on the basis of what Christ accomplished. Well, I wanted to read to you from A.E. Knox Concordant Commentary. I trust every one of you have one of these. If you don't, go to my website to the bookstore and go to the and get a copy of the Concordant Commentary and the Concordant Literal New Testament. Well, this is what A.E. Knox says in Romans 1:16 through 17. He says, "The evangel is God's power for salvation. Nothing else can take its place." Well, ponder that for a minute. "There is no other power in the universe which can turn men to God." That's fantastic. Isn't that wonderful? There is no other power in the universe that can turn men to God. There's no other power. There's only one power in the universe that can turn men to God, and that's the evangel. All modern substitutes and expedients, sanitary or social, and I think he's referring to the whole clean up your life movement, the Christian AAA version, you know, pulling yourself by your own bootstraps. All modern substitutes and expedients, sanitary or social, impassioned oratory or emotional excitement cannot save or make men right before God. Can you see why Paul and his message, this is he's the most hated man in the world? Did you ponder what Brother Knox just said here? Let me repeat this. And this is important. Ponder these words. The evangel is God's power for salvation. Nothing else can take its place. There is no other power in the universe which can turn men to God. All the modern substitutes and expedients, sanitary or social, impassioned oratory or emotional excitement, cannot save or make men right before God. The evangel alone, without any additions or apologies, is able to justify anyone who believes. I'm going to repeat that line again. The evangel alone, without any additions or apologies, is able to justify anyone who believes. This evangel imparts God's own righteousness to those who accept it. This is unspeakably more than the pardon or forgiveness proclaimed at Pentecost by the 12 apostles. Now, on verse 17, when we talked yesterday, the quotation from Habakkuk 2:4, I want to quote you Knox's comment on that. Knox here says, "When the law failed utterly, and Israel was far gone in apostasy, the prophet fell back upon God's unconditional promises and made the memorable statement, 'The just shall live by faith.' Now that Israel is again apostate, this rule once more supersedes the law." Well, I thought I'd quote that last part. I'm not sure I 100% agree with it. As far as I can tell, I think the just one by faith shall be living is a reference to Christ. So we'll leave it at that and let you ponder that. Now, going back to this text, if you remember, I gave you an outline, and remember I said that my outline of Romans is completely arbitrary. It's just my musings on this letter to help put it in a structural form that's easy to remember. And I mentioned that Romans 1 through 4 is justification. Romans 5 through 8 is sanctification or holiness. Romans 9 through 11 is dispensation. Romans 12 through 16 is vocation. Well, in Romans 1 through 4, we have the great truth of justification. And this is where we're at in our letter here. But before Paul announces, he gives you in verse 16 to 17, he announces to you this great message of justification in nutshell form. And he's going to come back to this in Romans chapter 3, verse 21. But before Paul does that, in Romans 1:18 to 32, he tells us that the Jew who had the knowledge of the true and living God in creation, the Gentile, let me repeat that. In Romans 1:18-32, he first shows us that the Gentile, who had the knowledge of God in creation, did not believe. And in Romans chapter 2, we have the Jew, who had the knowledge of God in the written word, the oracles of God, the law, yet they didn't believe. So what he's going to do before he comes back and gives us the evangel is he's going to give us the dark background of sin before he announces the good news. And this is an important thing. The evangel is so wonderful, but what makes it so wonderful is the background. And this is an amazing thing that God chooses. He waits, as it were, till all mankind has utterly failed. The Gentiles, Genesis 10 through 11, failed completely. We're going to see that in Romans 1, 18 to 32. And then God calls Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, and the rest of the Old Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures, dedicated to those people, the Jewish people, the Hebrews. And Christ, the Messiah, comes, they reject him, and then he's crucified, and he's risen again, and he sends the 12 out in Acts, and they reject him again. They reject the risen Christ and through his 12 apostles. And then when all the world is proved to be under the power of sin and can do nothing about it, it is at that point that God opens up to the world the floodgates of his grace. But guess what? The greatest message requires that there be the great sin behind it. Now, think about that. Without sin, we would not know the grace. And just to give a plug on a book here, there's a book you all should read on this topic. It's called The Problem of Evil and the Judgments of God by A. Enoch. And it's on our website at crossandthrone.com. Go to the store. You need to get a copy of this book and understand sin and its right relationship to God. And a lot of problems will be solved. But this is what Paul is going to do in Romans 1, 2, and the first part of 3, is to show us the backdrop of the great grace that is going to be displayed in Romans chapter 3. All right, so in Romans 1:18, we start off by saying, "For," this connects with what just went before, "God's indignation is being revealed from heaven on all irreverence and injustice of men who are retaining the truth in injustice." And it's going to take a while to get into these verses, so I'm just going to we're going to stop here, and I'm going to ask everyone to do their homework. If you can do this tonight, read Romans 1 through 4, maybe three times. There's a hefty homework assignment. Read Romans 1 through 4 about four times. And then tomorrow we come back and we'll begin we have to see the indignation and why it's coming before we see God displaying the riches of His grace in Romans chapter 3. And so keep that in mind. This is Dan Sheridan. And again, you've been listening to Sheridan on Romans. Our web address is crossandthrone.com. And if you do have any questions, feel free to call me, 847-312-4676. And if you have any questions or you want to talk about some of these issues. And if you guys want to keep the program running, please consider supporting us at P.O. Box 421, Round Lake, Illinois, 60073. Until next time, remember this, the closer you draw near to Christ, the less ceremonial and religious you will be.